Republican senator of Louisiana has also used a lot of his money to buy prostitutes. Vitter is still in government. Vitter, in fact, voted against Hillary Clinton. Vitter voted against the stimulus package. Vitter, Mr. I Love Prostitutes David Vitter, was one of the loudest ones complaining about contraception in the stimulus package. The man that exposes himself to venereal diseases all the time was complaining about trying to protect other Americans from venereal disease. But I bring Elliot Spitzer up because I want you to think about what made him fall. What made Elliot Spitzer fall was, yes, his own stupidity in seeing a prostitute. That was dumb, just like Clinton sleeping around was dumb. But people wouldn't care if Elliot Spitzer had not been the single best regulator on Wall Street. After all, Vitter is still in government. We still don't know, and we should find out, how they found out about Elliot Spitzer. Somebody who had no reason to monitor Spitzer, there was no warrant, there was no probable cause to believe Spitzer had committed a crime. Somebody was watching him, and they took him down. And the reason they took him down had nothing to do with prostitution. Elliot Spitzer, for all his moral flaws, was the best damned regulator of anyone on Wall Street. People on Wall Street feared him, and he was no more than, at the time, the Attorney General of the state of New York, later the governor of the state of New York. That man knew how to regulate. I wouldn't mind seeing that man in our Treasury Department right now. It's the demise of regulators like Elliot Spitzer that explains how rotten our economy is now. And we need good people, good regulators back in government. Hope you enjoyed the show. There will be no show tomorrow. I will see you next week. This is Mark Levin, signing off.
Cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome aboard! It's the middle of the week, and just by way of a sort of word to the wise is sufficient. We're under a tornado watch here. We don't get tornado watches in the hills and hollers of West Virginia that very much, but we are. And a severe thunderstorm warning until about, for about the next hour. So if anything goes sideways, you'll know that it's probably weather-related. Very rare. It's more the wind and the rain, certainly. I don't anticipate a tornado. Jesus, where's the wood to knock? All better now. How's that for rational? Somebody give me some salt. I'll chuck it over my shoulder. But anyway, so that's what that is. And as Mark mentioned a moment ago, and just a programming update, I mentioned this last night as well. We will not be here tomorrow evening. John Fox and I are still chatting about whether or not his schedule will permit me to forward some audio through to him. That remains to be seen. But the reason we won't be here tomorrow is because of a very, very, very important hearing here in my hometown about the mountaintop removal job that threatens to destroy our town, our homes, our local tourism economy, and frankly, everything that is good about this little place where we decided to live. So, my apologies, but this is unavoidable. This is one of those once more unto the breach, dear friends, kind of moments, and I hope you understand. A reminder, the new email address to reach me is Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid, at gmail.com. Please feel free to use it with your thoughts, your ideas, your observations. Just as we did the old address, I can certainly access it during the show, just as I did the old address, and I look forward to hearing from you. Also, please note that there are some fixes underway at the website, headonradionetwork.com. Many of you have asked about it, and I can tell you that access to the contribution button for PayPal is now back up. If you have not lately used it, it would be awfully nice if you did, because that's what keeps us going here. That and the sponsorship from Cold River Mountain Watch. So there's that. But, you know, it's not just the middle of the week. It's not just Wednesday. It's not just hump day downhill to Friday. Oh, no, 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 brethren and sistren. It's Wednesday and it's prayer meeting. Choirmaster, if you please.
Ladies and gentlemen, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let me hear you say, Amen.
Amen.
Let me hear you say, Praise the Lord.
Praise the Lord.
Let me hear you say, I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around.
I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around.
And it's all tax-free. Hallelujah.
Hallelujah.
Praise the Lord for all the cash I've got. Praise Him for my Rolls Royce and my yacht. Serving God ain't hard with a credit card. Jesus died so I could make a lot. Praise the Lord, He's made us millionaires. Wave your donations in the air. We've replaced our hymns with ATMs, and soon we'll charge a fee on every prayer. Jesus Christ was a poor man, don't you know? He should have used our accountants for his cash flow. Stop the sermon on the mount, he should have had a bank account. 2,000 years with interest, he'd be rolling in the dough. Praise the Lord, this song's out on CD, just $40.95 plus GST. Hallelujah, plenty of moolah, solid gold baubles on my Christmas tree. I've got all of heaven's riches.
Sing it!
Thanks to all you stupid bitches. Praise the Lord for modern Christianity. Whoever said religion should be free?
I love you. Come on in to the Cathedral of Common Sense, brethren and sistren. Come on down the blood-red carpet and lay your hands upon the subwoofer and feel the healing rays of reason flowing through your body. Aha! Glory, glory, and praise. Yes! This is Wednesday night. This is prayer meeting on the Head On Radio Network. I am Bishop Bob Kincaid. And with that having been said, we go straight to the business. The Wednesday night prayer meeting business. Let's start with a hypocrite. Let's start with a funny, if you will. This may be one of those moments to take little Timmy and little Susie and run them out of the room, because there's going to be some fun language involved. Not mine, mind you. I try not to use profanity from here in the pulpit. But there will be some fun language. Courtesy of one of the Congress's most moral men. That's right, Representative Eric Cantor, Repig-Lickin' of the Old Dominion of Virginia. And Representative Cantor was one of those people who said he was just saying no to Barack Obama. He's another one of those camp followers of the oxymoron, the nasty little junkie who deafened himself with street drugs. Flush Flemball. He's a very moral man, Congressman Cantor. Congressman Cantor, among other things in his illustrious career, has actively railed against obscenity. You know, the fun words. He was an early and eager voter for the Broadcast Decency Enforcement Act. You know, that piece of really idiotic the legislation that followed on the heels, well, not really the heels, that followed on, of Janet Jackson's costume wardrobe malfunction at the Super Bowl a few years back. You remember when all the little right-wingers were out there hopping up and down and bouncing on their little grazed knuckles, mouths hanging open, breathing air through them, and hooting and hollering about, why are we going to tell the children about that nipple? Right? The Broadcast Decency Enforcement Act allows fines of up to $500,000 for any broadcaster. And that starts with the person who says the word or allows the word, and let's say it's a syndicated show, every station that airs the words on the hook for a $500,000 fine from the Funky Communications Commission. And that is for airing any obscene, indecent, or profane material. Luckily for us, it doesn't apply to the intertubes. We have real free speech here on the net thus far. They have not spoiled that. Moral men like Eric Cantor yet. We have free speech, so we can play for you something that Eric Cantor has passed around. Remember, again, Eric Cantor, moral man. Eric Cantor, man of family values. Eric Cantor, upstanding member of the morality crusading Repig Lickin party. Yeah, Eric Cantor has a spokesman who doesn't much like the union that represents workers in the public sector. Ask me. AFSCME, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. See how easy that is to say? This will make a difference in a little bit. Yep, Cantor, upright, moral, God-fearing Republican, released via his spokesman a video opposing Ask Me, because Ask Me has gone after Eric Cantor for being one of those hate America first, I hope Obama fails Repig-Lickins, running along and playing lick spittle to Flush Flemball. Here's that civil discourse that the Repig-Lickin party so earnestly desires. Again, you will not hear this on terrestrial radio. You will not see this on terrestrial television. Because it is censored media. They are censored media. You will, however, hear it here. Now, I warned you a little bit ago to get little Timmy and little Susie out of the room so you wouldn't have to explain these words. This is the audio to the video. It's a man driving in a car with a voiceover. He's driving past various and sundry public employee types. Here we go.
Find your way to work tomorrow instead of sitting around with your finger up your ass. Look around. There's a union out there called AFSCME, and they're busting their balls for you doing a lot of shit work you take for granted. For example, we pick up your fucking garbage. We got broads out there who'll keep your kids from getting run over by some hard-on. We plug up the holes in the road so you don't fuck up your car. And we push around a lot of little old ladies from Florida. We're out there zapping rats and roaches and making sure your kids don't drink piss from no fucking water fountains. The fucking AFSCME, amalgamated federalization. Hey, I don't know what the fuck it means. All I know is we're hard-working, tax-paying people like you, and we don't take shit from nobody. You got that, asshole? AFSCME, the fucking union that works for you.
I'm not going to play that twice. I wonder if I should have played it once. Wow. If you ever wanted a textbook definition of the disdain in which the repig-licking party of the United States of America, you know, party first, repig-lickings, if you ever wanted a textbook definition of the disdain in which they hold working people in this country, you have it in this mockery by Eric Cantor of Virginia. Lord God, how many union men and women died in the conflagrations and the disasters attendant upon September the 11th, 2001. How many AFSCME members, how many members of the Fraternal Order of Police, the Brotherhood of Firefighters, how many died in New York, how many died at the Pentagon, how many union stewardesses, flight attendants, how many union pilots died on September the 11th, 2001, which the repig-licking party without fail waves like a bloody shirt in front of the eyes of the American people. How many? Damn Eric Cantor. Damn him. It was, as we have noted on this program, union workers who made sure that no one died in that water landing in the Hudson River. Union flight attendants, a union pilot, a union flight crew, union first responders, police, marine safety, union pilots in the helicopters hovering above, making sure that no one was missed. Union nurses, union emergency medical responders. And this pig, this vile amalgam of cells that shaped itself into a noxious right-wing worker-hating piece of slime, puts that out. And by the way, did you notice the accent? I did. The sickening implications of this are, well, sadly, they are, union air traffic controllers, Sue. Yeah. This is all too typical for a repig-licking. But some things are even over the top for human or pseudo humans as vile as a repig licking. This is one of them, and the nerve of this man to have stood up in the Congress and breathlessly inveighed against demonic nipples being flashed before our innocent eyes. and arguing in favor of career-ending fines for literally a slip of the tongue. Oh, Republican Party, what can't you be made hypocrites over? Brad Dayspring is the piece of human waste who is an assistant to Cantor. He has released an apology. It reads as follows. I would like to apologize for a joke that was no way an official response from Congressman Cantor, but instead an inappropriate email. I apologize to AFSCME for my inappropriate email containing an old video. It's just an old video. That's what it was, an old video. Let me be clear. We know people are hurting in these trying times, and House Republicans completely agree that we must pass an economic recovery bill that preserves, protects, and creates jobs for Americans facing these economic challenges. You know what? That not that I can speak for AFSCME. Apology not accepted. Not as the son of a union man, not as the grandson of a union man, not as the great-grandson of a union man. No, hell no. Apology not accepted. Because you'll notice in that sign a bill that preserves, protects, and creates jobs for Americans facing these economic challenges. What goes unstated, as long as they're not union jobs, as long as they're low-wage jobs, as long as they're jobs where the bosses can shove people around through with the added incentive of economic desperation, those jobs the Republican Party are for. It reminds me of an email that I received from our buddy Tosh just a little bit ago. He said, Bob, the GOP will still be working for tax cuts when the tax rates reach zero. For them, there is no possibility that you can tax too little. Of course, too little taxation equals anarchy, but hey, everyone will be able to find work protecting their betters. Some still want to go back to tariffs, only then, for free market reasons, no tariffs. Here's what would happen if you take Randian anarcho-capitalist philosophies. Wow. I'm going to take that one and put it on my mantle. That's a keeper. Randian anarcho-capitalist philosophies to their end. A boss hires 5 bodyguards. These guards then hire 4 guards to protect themselves. The guards' guards then hire 3 associate guards to themselves. At each level, the guards protect the real boss, their real boss, the bosses, bodyguards, bodyguards, and so on. Pretty soon, everybody's guarding someone. Tosh notes, we've seen this before. It was feudalism. I want to be a lord, please, says Tosh. You don't vote for kings. How'd you become king then? Well, you know that bit. So that's a starting place for tonight. Just a bunch of white guys sitting around Republicaning. Eric Cantor. Now, how are they going to handle that on the media? How are they going to handle that in the for-profit media? Because Eric Cantor, isn't this beautiful? Lord, the evil web-like machinations weaving in and out and over and among themselves of a Republican are stunningly beautiful. Eric Cantor knows, and Eric Cantor's assistant knows, the media can't play this on air because Eric Cantor already participated in creating a law that makes sure that they can't play Eric Cantor's joke on the air. That's beautiful. I mean, in its sort of Machiavellian, the castle on the hill, neon, the neon light, evil scientist, boo kind of way. That's beautiful. So don't look for this on your evening news. Don't look for this on any government-censored broadcast that stands to be financially ruined for playing the words of a dirty-minded Republican, because the dirty-minded Republican fixed it so they can't. as it goes in one of my favorite books, man, that's some catch, that catch 22. Astonishing. Just astonishing. So that's the beginning point tonight. There's one other thing I want to do before I open the phones up. You know what? If you want to go ahead and light stuff up, go ahead. 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. Or that's toll free. The other one's 304-658-3333 on your nickel. And you can save us a couple of pennies, nickels, dimes, or dollars that we have so dang few of in the first place. I want to go to a darker place, frankly. And this is another thing that you will not hear in its entirety in the for-profit media. I'm talking about something, that happened Monday. This was kindly provided to me by our blogger, Texas Betsy. And it fulfills something that I told you as it happened. This is not Bob the Prophet moment, but it is prayer meeting night, and this does go to the topic. Monday, in Knoxville, Tennessee, Jim D. Adkison, 58 years old, was sentenced on a plea of guilty to 2 murders and 6 woundings. Jim D. Adkison is the shooter from the Tennessee Valley Unitarian Universalist Church in Knoxville, Tennessee. Judge Mary Beth Leibowitz heard his guilty plea and sentenced him to life in prison without parole on 2 counts of first-degree murder and 6 of attempted murder, thereby forestalling a trial in which Jim D. Adkison would have pled insanity on the one hand and faced the death penalty on the other. A mental health expert determined that Adkison was competent to make his guilty plea, but would have, as noted, tried for the insanity defense at trial. Jim D. Adkison, a cold-blooded murderer, will get life in prison without parole, has gotten it, in a state that not as bad as Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, or Louisiana, mind you, but or Lord knows Texas, but does have the death penalty and is not afraid to use it. And had this been some liberal attacking, say, some Baptist church, would gladly have done so. Adkison wrote a letter that was found on him. You'll recall that Adkison had a sawed-off shotgun and about 70 shells. He planned to shoot until the cops shot him, but he was overpowered by heroic members of the Unitarian Universalist congregation after he had wounded 6, blinded a couple, and killed 2. Not only did he have a shotgun, but he also had copies of Liberalism is a Mental Disorder by Michael Savage and some idiotic right-wing screed recently hustled on an unsuspecting public by Bill O'Reilly. The police would not at the time release the note. The note has been released to the media. It is 4 pages, it is rambling, and it is vicious. And I want you to hear it. Because of advertising and the segment requirements on in the mainstream for-profit media, you will not hear this note in its entirety. You will hear it here. So sit back and don't relax. They walk among us. To whom it may concern. I guess you're wondering why I did this. See, this was supposed to be a suicide note. This was after the cops had blown him away, they would find this. But brave liberals, brave Unitarians, stopped it from happening. To whom it may concern, I guess you're wondering why I did this. Well, let me explain in detail. Over the years, I've had some good jobs, but I always got laid off. Now I'm 58 years old and I can't get a decent job. I'm told I'm overqualified, which is a code word for too damned old. Like I'm expected to age gracefully into poverty. No thanks. I'm done. I've always wondered why I was put on the earth. For years, I thought I was put here to die as cannon fodder in Vietnam, but somehow cheated the devil out of it. Lately, I've been feeling helpless in our war on terrorism. But I realized I could engage the terrorists' allies here in America. The best allies they've got. The Democrats! The Democrats have done everything they can do to tie our hands in this war on terror. They're all a bunch of traitors. They want America to loose this war for reasons I cannot understand. It makes me so mad. In a parallel train of thought, it saddens me to think back on all the bad things that liberalism has done to this country. The worst problem America faces today is liberalism. They have dumbed down education. They have defined deviancy down. Liberals have attacked every major institution that made America great. From the Boy Scouts to the military, from education to the religion, the major news outlets have become the propaganda arm of the Democrat Party. Liberals are evil. They embrace the tenets of Karl Marx. They're Marxist, socialist, communists. The Unitarian Universalist Church. Don't let the word church mislead you. This isn't a church, it's a cult. They don't even believe in God. They worship the God of secularism. These sick people aren't liberals, they're ultra-liberals. This is a collection of sickos, weirdos, and homos. The UU Church is the fountainhead, the veritable wellspring of anti-American organizations like MoveOn.org, Code Pink, and other un-American groups. Those people are absolute hypocrites. They embrace every pervert that comes down the pike, but if they find out you're a conservative, they absolutely hate you. I know. I experienced it. I can't for the life of me understand why these people would embrace Marxism like they do. I'd like someone to do an expose on this church. It's a den of un-American vipers. They call themselves progressive. How's a white woman having a nigger baby progress? How is a man sticking his dick up another man's ass progress? It's an abomination. It takes a warped mind to hate America. It makes me so angry, I can't live with it anymore. The environmental nuts have to be stopped. Know this, if nothing else. This was a hate crime. I hate the damn left-wing liberals. There is a vast left-wing conspiracy in this country, and these liberals are working together to attack every decent and honorable institution in the nation, trying to turn this country into a communist state. Shame on them. This was a political protest. I'm protesting the liberal Supreme Court justices for giving the terrorists at Gitmo constitutional rights. I'm protesting the major news outlets, ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN, PBS, for being the propaganda wing of the Democrat Party. It's a criminal what they're getting away with. They're traitorous. They must be stopped. I'm protesting the DNC running such a radical leftist candidate. Osama Hussein Obama, yo mama. No experience, no brains, a joke. Dangerous to America. Hell, he looks like Curious George. 3. This was a symbolic killing. Who I wanted to kill was every Democrat in the Senate and House, the 100 people in Bernard Goldberg's book. I'd like to kill everyone in the mainstream media, but I knew these people were inaccessible to me. I couldn't get to the generals and high-ranking officers of the Marxist movement, so I went after the foot soldiers, the chicken shit liberals that vote in these traitorous people. Someone had to get the ball rolling. I volunteered. I hope others do the same. It's the only way we can rid America of this cancer's pestilence. In conclusion, no one gets out of this world alive, so I've chosen to skip the bad years of poverty. I know my life is going downhill fast from here. The future looks bleak. I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired. I'm absolutely fed up. So I thought I'd do something good for this country. Kill Democrats till the cops kill me. If decent, patriotic Americans could vote 3 times in every election, we couldn't stem this tide of liberalism that's destroying America. Liberals are a pest like termites. Millions of them. Each little bite contributes to the downfall of this great nation. The only way we can rid ourselves of this evil is kill them in the streets. Kill them where they gather. I'd like to encourage other like-minded people to do what I've done. If life ain't worth living anymore, don't just kill yourself. Do something for your country before you go. Go kill liberals. Tell the cop that killed me that I said, thanks, I needed that. I have no next of kin, no living relatives. If you would take my sorry carcass to the body farm or donate it to science or just throw me in the Tennessee River. Sincerely, Jim David Adkisson. Well, what do you think? Well, I'll tell you what. Tennessee at the Unitarian Universalist Church. The words of this messes with me bad. John Bosted is one of the church members, one of the heroes who tackled this murderous fascist. And he said he didn't think Adkisson was insane, but he was pretty sure that Adkisson was manipulated by rhetoric, years of it, hours of it every day, aimed at liberals. Unbalanced, yes. Bitter, yes. Evil, yes. Insane, not in our ordinary use of the word, Bosted said. There are a lot of people who hate liberals, and if we stir that around in the pot and on the airwaves, eventually there will be people like Adkisson who get infected by the violent rhetoric and put it into violent action. You think there are other Jim Adkissons out there listening to hate speech? I do, he said. At the moment he was sentenced, victims and church members were in the courtroom weeping. Greg McKendry, a 60-year-old man, threw himself in front of the shotgun and took the blast and kept it from hitting others. Vicki Masters was there to direct the children's play. She said when he came into the courtroom, he had a look of sheer evil on his face. He really did, evil as well as arrogance. The judge offered Mr. Adkisson a chance to address the congregation before sentencing. He said, "No, ma'am, I have nothing to say." There is a photograph of him in the story that I'm looking at, and he is sitting there grinning like a fox eating poop out of a wire brush. He is happy for what he did. He thinks he is a patriot. You know, every night when Mike Malloy closes his program, he says, "Watch your back." He ain't kidding. I'm not either. They do walk among us, and they are bloodthirsty, and they are fed a diet of raw meat from dawn to dusk, from midnight to noon, to midnight the next, every day. You can't get away from it. I told the story how driving out of Washington, D.C., I had to go through, you know, lots of different, and finally found one flickering little candle flame in the Washington, D.C. market that had something I could stand to listen to on it. But there was no lack of right-wing hate. "These liberals! Liberalism! I'm telling you, liberalism is a mental disorder!" You remember Michael Savage. You know what Bill O'Reilly talks about. You heard him suggest that a lynch mob might be appropriate for Michelle Obama. We hear it every day. It's called eliminationist rhetoric. Here in the hills, it's used against us when we stand up to oppose the destruction of our homes. A dear friend of mine, Beau Webb, was recently told in a letter to the editor of the Beckley paper that he was not worth, quote, putting a mountain, he's not worth the powder it would take to put a mountain on him. Beau lives at the foot of a mountaintop removal operation. This is the world we live in. These are the threats we face. I never advocate violence. I am an opponent of violence. I am a proponent of nonviolence. But I also acknowledge what the law terms an absolute right to self-defense. Anytime you're in a place where you know you are in the company of hardcore right-wingers, you watch your ass. Because you can bet they're watching yours. And it is statistically impossible in a country of this size, with the number of people listening to right-wing hate radio, that there are not literally Jim David Adkissons in their thousands in this nation. They walk among us. Watch your ass. They mean you no good. From Eric Cantor, trying to whip up the faithful with vulgarities about working Americans, to Jim David Adkisson walking into a congregation comprised of nonviolent, loving, accepting human beings and blowing them away. They walk among us. And to try to pretend that they do not is foolhardy, dangerous, and tragic as it is to say it, potentially fatal. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Brother Bob.
Brother Albert.
Hey, I'm sorry about, man, that's in our heads. That is, yeah, he is a filthy, degenerate animal. And, he'll be welcome arms by the Aryan Brotherhood or one of those other.
You know, I was going to get around to that, but you're absolutely right.
Yeah. Another poobah in the.
You know, it's interesting that he mentioned Bernard Goldberg by name. Do you think that might engender a little lawsuit?
I hope so, because he's another. He is hideous. With the 100 people that are ruining America.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah. Something.
Yeah, ruining America.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you expect? I mean, there's a test in the law called reasonable foreseeability. When you accuse people of ruining America, Albert, what may one reasonably expect to be the outcome of someone reading that garbage? This man was ruled sane. So Bernard Goldberg can't be heard to plead that, well, he was just crazy.
True. Yeah, you know, but, you know, these people don't look at reality like that. You know, I mean, like, you know, they're sitting here talking about, you know, like, I just got this overwhelming scope of the fascist mind. Especially, you know, they don't love God, the Lord, so, you know, is this guy going to be religious now, too? You know, so it always brings to mind those Dominionist-type talk and, you know, the rapturists who sit there and don't really...
The Reconstructionists. This is straight out of that. There, that man, you know, apart from the heinous evil that he did, that man did a favor in leaving that note. Because... frankly, in 4 pages of handwritten scrawl, which was no small task to read on the fly, I gotta tell you. In those 4 pages of handwritten scrawl, Albert, he touched on virtually every single talking point that goes out across the airwaves of this country every blessed day. That those 4 pages are the very formula by which Flimball, O'Reilly, the Savage, Bortz, Beck, that whole dirty crowd have become millionaires. That's not a manifesto. That's a recipe.
Yeah, I mean, these are the cookies that these people have been baking for years. And you know, the sad thing is Atkinson with his, you know, frazzled brain isn't even, you know, probably going to be the worst of it. You know, unfortunately, that's what the eyes of fear, that's the eyes of fear right there. You know, the eyes of fear sitting there dragging just stupid idiots out there like him. What the hell was he even talking about? I noticed he made a lot of accusations, but he never backed up anything. You know, I didn't even hear the ACLU in there.
One of the things that we do know, Albert, is that he was married to a woman for a time who was a member of that church. And apparently that's that business about if you're a conservative, they'll reject you. And Albert, I gotta tell you, I hope this conversation can continue. I'm not running off, but as I warned at the top of the program, we don't have any electricity here. So I'm running on battery. It blinked about 4 times while I was reading the screed. But if you get past 4 blinks and it goes out again, generally around these parts, you're SOL.
Okay.
So if it doesn't come back in a couple of minutes, all of my battery backups are going to crap out on me. So I really wanted us to get going on this. What I'll do is you and I will ring off for the time being because I've got to get all these computers shut down in enough time to not have them damaged.
Yes, sir.
I'm sorry. Do you hear the beeping? Do you hear the beeping in the background?
I hear it. No, I can hear it. Absolutely. Absolutely. Get what you need to get done, Bob. I'll talk with you later.
All right. Take care, Brother Albert.
Be good, brother.
Bye now. I hate this, but I have no choice in the matter. I don't know how much longer. I've never really put these batteries to the test. They should last a little while, but there's no real way of knowing. So I'm going to log out of chat. see you guys. And I'm going to bail out of the program so I can shut everything down before anything goes south. And I will be back with you soon, assuming that the power comes back on. Okay? All right. Sorry if it winds up being a short show, but we got the two hot stories out there. Really proud of these battery backups for holding up like they have. Say hi, Agnes.
Hello, everyone.
She came in here to make it because she knows I'm terrified of the dark.
I bring light.
Yeah, and the dark's... See, I'm terrified of the dark, but the dark's afraid of her. So that's the skinny. And if the power comes back, I'll come back. As the old saying goes, please stand by.
Be safe and stay inside.
Well, not everybody's got this going past them, dear. Okay, be safe. Jim David Atkinson's are out there, too. So, yeah, be safe and stay inside. Talk to you soon. Later, all.
It's over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area. You have entered a restricted broadcast.
Your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Hey there. Caught me having a glass of water. Yes, indeed. How are you today? So good to have you along with us here on the Guy James Show this afternoon. Let me turn up the volume here a little bit. Seems like things are maybe just a little bit quiet. Maybe that'll do it. Just seem like things are a bit quiet here this afternoon on the gauges. Let me know if that's not high enough. We'll just send the engineer over to the board here and have him just mess with everything. Wow, what a day. A lot going on. I do have to remember we are expecting a call around 3:30 from Representative Congressman Steve Cohen from Tennessee to talk about the stimulus bill, obviously being greatly debated today. We'll be very interested to see how that debate goes today. 866-546-5254, if you'd like to join us here on the program, we'd love to have you join us today. 866-546-5254. I do want to start the program off today by mentioning one thing, and I'll extrapolate on it a little bit later. Never, 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 ever will I ever walk into another Home Depot store and buy anything, ever, I solemnly swear. I solemnly swore I would never go into a Walmart store again some 10 or 12 years ago, and I have not. And I swear, as of today, I will not ever go in another Home Depot store, and I will tell you why in just a little while. Well, let me tell you why right now. Let's not do that deal where we tease you. Let me find it here. As you know, we've got the Employees Free Choice Act, and it's very near and dear to the hearts of many of us. And it's something that labor, the people that own the businesses and run the businesses, one of them being Home Depot, that they are desperate to defeat. And they're making every effort to go after that bill. When it comes up, it's probably not going to come up until summer, from what I hear, probably the summertime. But employee free choice is a human right. And it's something that everybody ought to have. It's been far too much in the favor of the corporate masters for many years now. And so they got a group together on the phone, and I don't know how they got this recording, but it got the CEO of and found one of the founders of Home Depot. And recorded this about how he's talking against workers and the Free Choice Act. So let's just hear this. This guy mouthing off, and he is the reason I'll never again go in a Home Depot store.
To pay for the programs that they're going to put in, they're going to have to get the money somewhere, and the unions will go after anybody who works for a living and makes a living. There's no question about it. That Joe the plumber, whatever the hell he does for a living, is going to pay for this in the future along with everybody else. Corporate taxes will go up along with everything else. And this is the demise of a civilization. This is how a civilization disappears. I'm sitting here as an elder statesman, and I'm watching this happen, and I don't believe it.
And while the consequences to the business community will be huge, individuals don't see it as a big deal until they're actually subject to it. And the business community has not, as Bernie has said. They have either run from this or they haven't been informed about it. And the unions, as opposed to years ago when they tried to do this, the unions made a very big deal about this and there was a major fight. Today, the unions have been very quiet about it, and the business community doesn't tend to fight if there's nothing to fight against. And so without there being an offense put out front by the unions, because they know they don't need to try and pass it, they only need to get the right number of legislators in place, if there's no big offense by the unions, then there's no defense by the business community. And what the business community needed was an offense of its own, and they've been very slow to find their voice and come to the table.
Yeah, and what has happened is that their organizations that they belong to, all of the retail associations, et cetera, have not been able to deal with this because they have so many members and they just, I don't know. It's politics as usual, bureaucracy. I don't have a clue.
Death by committee.
It's death by committee. It's just incredible. Every single retailer, you're all retail analysts. If a retailer has not gotten involved with this, if he has not spent money on this election, if he has not spent money, the Norm Coleman and all these other guys should be shot, should be thrown out of their goddamn jobs. As I've been saying in the media,
it hasn't
appeared anywhere. CNN, NBC. I was on Squawk Box three times already. I will tell you, CNBC gave me 2 hours on the Squawk Box, and I had more time on the Squawk Box trying to get CEOs to understand this. And so far, some of them have come out of their deep sleep. Most of them have not come out of their deep sleep. We've had companies where the council, the corporate council, have said, oh, this really is not going to affect us. You're not going to hear about this. Hopefully, calls like this will stir up the pot, and calls like this, where I hope that you will call your people that you cover and say, what are you doing about this? You know, I'm going to bring up a point that as a shareholder, if I knew the CEO of a company wasn't doing anything on something that was going to have a dramatic effect on my business, I'd sue the son of a bitch. I really would sue him.
There actually may be lawsuits after this is over.
Well, you know what? I'm going to join in the lawsuits. I'm so angry at some of these CEOs, I can't even believe the stupidity that's involved here. This is as important as anything that's ever happened to these companies. And they're not reacting, and they're not fighting. And the old-time fighters are gone. But there are guys out there, by the way, I want you to know, that doesn't go across the board. There are people out there that are very quietly doing a lot of stuff, a lot of things, and they're all afraid. They're afraid of the unions. They're afraid of the trial lawyers. The truth is that there are ways to give money through C4s and C6s to educate the public to this. If the public knew about it, by the way, the statistics are that almost 80% of the public doesn't like this law.
That is a flat-out lie. That is a flat-out monstrous distortion of the truth. In the latest poll that they've done on this survey, 79% of Americans, 79%, the 180 from what Bernie Marcus, founder of Home Depot, just said, 79% said Americans deserve a chance at the free choice, labor free choice. 79%. So put that in your pipe and smoke it, Bernie Marcus. I will never, and I will call them probably tomorrow, my local store, and let them know that I would never, ever walk in the door of another Home Depot trying to deny the right to organize. And, of course, what else is new? Our favorite people, Walmart, has been doing that for years through intimidation and threats. They've avoided having unions, America's largest employer. I believe they still are America's largest employer. But we have Home Depot in our particular area here, and I haven't read about it in any other areas of the country. I'm sure it's happened in other areas of the country. Johnny O just brought it up on the chat room, but it is true they were selling drywall from China that has some kind of toxic chemical, I believe sulfur in it. And it messes up your home air conditioning. And people build all kinds of brand new homes, and the chemicals inside this Chinese drywall from Home Depot corrodes the air conditioning system and ruins it, and it also is a health hazard in a brand new home because they had to import drywall, for God's sake, from China. I'm really tired of this. Just today, and if I sound like I'm particularly angry about it, I am. I lived in a small community in Ohio for many, many years, and just today I got news that the local supermarket, NIGA, locally owned, and as you know, the Independent Grocers Association is a deal where they got together for buying power, but they're independently owned, the IGAs. Not many of them left, I don't think. But they got together years ago to have some buying power so that they could sell groceries to people at a reasonable price. Going to close the local IGA and lay off 40 people in a small community, a very small community. 40 people without jobs and losing the grocery store. You know why? You know why they're closing? Guess who moved into this small community just a few years ago? Guess who? You got it. Wally World. They will be the destruction of retail America. And when they have ousted everybody that's in their path, when they've shoved all the mall and paw businesses and even small and intermediate-sized businesses out of their way and no longer have any competition, then we'll see how interested they are in bringing you low, low prices. When there's no place else to shop, and that's what they're after, make no mistake, that is exactly what they're after. when there's no other stores to walk into for the particular items that they sell, then you will see the end of Walmart's low, low prices. Right you are, bedtime for Bonzo. Low, low prices. And Americans couldn't wait to flock and get those low, low prices. Think what that's cost you. Think what those low, low prices from China and Wally World has cost you. Just think what it's done to the local economies. They come into a town. Here's how it usually works. They come into a small town. They want to be on the outskirts of town someplace, usually in an area that's not even incorporated. Then they get that incorporated, and they want the city to run sewer lines and water lines out to them, free, of course. And then they want tax abatements for like 20 years. And they come into the city council, and they promise that they're going to provide a couple of hundred jobs, good jobs for the local community. Oh, they supply a couple of hundred jobs, all right, almost all of them part-time. Almost all of them low-paying to the point where you could not ever support a family on one. And then they threaten you. They intimidate you. They make you work off the clock. They make you do a little extra. They extract every pound of flesh they can possibly get from you. And then your beautiful little downtown area, and of course all the profits are going to Bentonville, Arkansas, not to your local community. I know about this. I was involved in this. The profits go to Bentonville. The stores are really run from Bentonville. They have no benefit other than a few cheap-ass prices for junk for the local community. And one by one by one, they clean out the downtown. I've seen it over and over and over again. I was involved in one of these fights. Over and over again, they clean out one store at a time. Little mom-and-pop stores that have been in a community for decades, run by the family for years and years and years, known well and trusted. And everybody says, don't worry, George, we'll come and still go to your hardware store. Hey, Frank, we'll still come to your little grocery store. Hey, Paul, we'll still come to your little pharmacy store downtown. We love you. You're local people. And slowly but surely, the new newspaper ads show up, the flyers show up, Wally World offers people something for nothing, some shit from China, and people head to that store. And through the wonderful world of Madison Avenue-type marketing, Wally World shuts down the local pharmacy, shuts down the local hardware store, shuts down the local grocery store. Eventually, nothing but offices in the downtown are empty buildings, and there might as well be sagebrush flowing through the town. Why did I get started on this today? I promised myself that I was going to stay calm and collected today. Thank you, Betsy, for sending that notice about that today. Texas Betsy set that in, and I put my antenna up and did a little research on the Home Depot thing. I hope you will join me in that effort, what little we can do. It's not just in the little community I'm from. It's happening all over America. You've seen the lawsuits. You've seen where Walmart wants to build a store on historical sites and all that. It's not good for America. Anyway, I wanted to start the show off. I didn't really mean to start the show off to that today, talking about the Employee Free Choice Act, and it's going to come to a head probably in June or July, right along in there. I don't know why they're waiting so long, but I guess they have so many things on the agenda. But I wanted you to hear that little ditty by Bernie Marcus, the charismatic co-founder of Home Depot. And the other voice in that was Rick Berman. He's a opponent the employee free choice. He's a founder of the Center for Union Facts. Oh, wouldn't you like to read all of his union facts? Unions. Those dastardly unions. Who fought for, in many cases, died for decent wages for Americans. Decent hours for Americans to work. Child labor laws. Those terrible unions that fought for those things and won them. Those terrible unions that helped build the middle class in this country. Those terrible unions that afforded so many people the luxury of finally buying their own home, owning their own automobile, and living the great American dream. Again, I apologize for getting all bent out of shape over that today, but I think it's something worth getting bent out of shape over. I know the economy is bad, and I know many communities are suffering. I love the small communities. There's something special about these little rural towns across the Midwest and other places across the country. Wonderful places to live, wonderful places to be brought up. You establish some real values in places like that. Not that you don't in the big cities as well. But there's just something special about little rural America and their small towns. And I'm happy that I was brought up in close proximity to those little communities. Very much so. 866-546-5254. As I mentioned before, we are going to talk to Representative Steve Cohen from Tennessee. We'll probably end up just taking his call live right on the air. That's the way we do it here. We've not afforded the luxury of hiring a producer in a control room and all that, although we have a studio that's just as modern and well-equipped as many of those you might see. But, oh, Nanette says it's pouring down snow again. I know a lot of you got a lot of snow last night across the upper Midwest, and I hope you like snow. I do want to mention, and I'll say it, and as you know, I am not averse to passing out criticism of any politician, be he a Democrat, a Republican, or one I love or despise. It doesn't matter. If he does something I think is not the way I like it, I'll speak up. And usually I think I'm speaking up on behalf of many of you. I know how many of you speak and how you feel about politicians. And I must say this is my first real criticism of President Obama since his inaugural oath. And I say that because I think he is massively screwing up the stimulus bill by trying to do the nonpartisan thing. If he thinks he's going to get the Republicans to go along with him on this or anything else, he is dreaming. I shall be surprised if he gets 5 Republicans to go along with him. It ain't going to happen. The Republicans have already got him to cut out parts of his plan and to get them to go along while they have no intention whatsoever being bipartisan on this or on any other issue. Just isn't going to happen. It's pure folly to think they'll ever play ball with Obama and the Democrats. Their sole mission is to make him look bad, and I think they got a little bit of it done already. Why would you listen to the Republicans right now? Why would you listen to them at all? Tax cuts during a wartime, an abject failure. A failure. And they're hanging that over Obama's head right now like, oh, we got to get these tax cuts in here. Screw them. They don't have the votes. Obama doesn't need their votes. Why would you listen to these losers, proven losers? I'm going to head on over to the phone here just for a minute. Well, we're expecting. I'm going to clear the phones. Sorry, I'm waiting for a special call. So forgive me for that. I'm clearing the phones right now. I'd like to know, why on earth would anybody listen to the Republicans? Why would you feel you had to? I don't get it. I said this when Barack Obama was running for president. You know I did. He mentioned then that he would like to compromise with these people. It's not going to happen. Unless there's some miracle, it's just not going to happen. And personally, from looking at the stimulus program already, and we hope to have the congressman on here pretty soon, unless they're involved in a hell of a debate or a vote, I think it's already short on some things that it needs. And I just don't think we ought to indulge them. I don't know any reason to indulge them. They have... I just think it's a fantasy for President Obama. Despite all the evidence to the contrary over the last several years, it's a fantasy of his that he thinks he can negotiate with the current Republican leadership in good faith. Never happen. It'll never happen. If he thinks Boehner and Mitch McConnell will talk to him, simply not going to work. It will not work. He went over to the Hill for the meeting with the House Republicans to get their input on the stimulus bill. Well, I don't know why he wanted to listen to them in the first place and to try and talk them into supporting it. So yesterday morning they had the House leadership having a meeting, and they decided right then and there, Matt Boehner and his number two whip, Cantor, decide right then and there, they told the rank-and-file members Tuesday morning during a closed-door meeting, told them to oppose the bill when it comes to the floor on Wednesday. That's straight from the Republicans. And meanwhile, they're out in public pretending that they're bargaining in good faith with President Obama. They're not bargaining in good faith. Does anybody believe that? They told the Republicans that they assembled in the meeting that there wasn't any reason for them to support the measure. And they're going to urge, and we shall see. We shall see how much power Boehner and Cantor have. But they've decided that it's in their political interest to oppose this stimulus bill no matter what. And when you stop and think about it, politically, if they can pull it off, it's the right thing for them to do. Ethically, morally, proves to me they're a bunch of political thugs. Kind of political thugs we've been talking about for a long time now. But if Obama's stimulus plan ends up being a success, if it's judged a success when this is all over and done with, the Republicans' political gain from adding some more votes to it, so what? So they're figuring and they're hoping that it'll fail. And failure is what will help them politically. And they figure that Obama will be left holding the bag, and their ticket back into power in 2010 is opposing this thing and hoping that it fails and helping it fail. Simple, huh? They've got no ethics, and it's clear they want this to fail for their own gain, so they'll hammer the bill as much as they possibly can. And they'll push for more Republican-style tax cuts. And they'll push for those tax cuts, and I hope to God Obama and them don't give in on them. Because if they do, it'll be at the expense of some other programs we desperately need. And I'm not saying there aren't some things in that we don't need, because from what I've read so far, it's inevitable, absolutely inevitable, that there's going to be some pork in it. And in my humble opinion, there is some pork in it. So I think Obama might get a couple of Republican senators to go along with him. But really, the Republicans have already decided that that good old-fashioned obstructionism that they've been using for quite a while now works for them. And what works for them most of all, as they crank up their right-wing radio propaganda machine, the likes of a Mr. Limbaugh. One moment, please. Hello, you're on the Guy James Show. Hello, you're on the Guy James Show. Hello? Oops, we got disconnected. That was our call from Washington. I hope they call right back. Don't know what happened to that. We'll take that call live when it comes in again. Hopefully it will come in again. Yeah, if you're listening right now, don't call at the moment. We're going to wait and take this call. I'm sure this is the congressman calling. Obviously, someone's calling in that's not listening to the program. I've got a couple of other calls coming in. I can't take their calls right now because we're waiting on it. Please, do not call at the moment until we get our call from the congressman. We'll tie up the lines and we won't be able to get our guest on. Alright, I think, here we go. Nothing like live radio, huh? Hello, you're on the Guy James Show. Well, I don't know what's happening here. Hello? Hello? Ah. Let's try this ourselves. Don't know what's happening here. We can't get a... Hey, we'll go to a quick break, and we'll be right back.
This is the Media Matters Minute. I'm Ben Fischel. Our top item today, echoing the Republican leadership office, members of the media, including the San Francisco Chronicle, are falsely claiming that over $4 billion of the economic stimulus plan is going to the liberal activist group, Acorn. Here's Rush Limbaugh.
Do you know that in the Obama stimulus package, $4.19 billion is going to Acorn, Obama's community organization? Would somebody tell me what the stimulus is in that?
In actuality, a provision of the stimulus package would appropriate $4.19 billion to neighborhood stabilization activities related to emergency assistance for the redevelopment of abandoned and foreclosed homes, not Acorn. But today's most outrageous comment goes to Sean Hannity, using instances of erratic weather patterns to dismiss global warming.
By the way, did you hear that for only the second time in history, it snowed in the United Arab Emirates? Global warming?
For these stories and more, visit MediaMatters.org.
Don't we know?
What we want.
It's our pleasure right now to have Congressman Steve Cohen from Tennessee along with us. Congressman, welcome to the program.
Well, nice to be with you and your listeners.
Sorry about the phone mess up there. I don't have any idea what's happening today. I do thank you very much for joining us today. What district is it? You're from District...
District 9 in Tennessee, which is Memphis.
Ah, good old Memphis. Love that barbecue.
Barbecue, basketball, Elvis,
yeah.
Express, St. Jude Children's Hospital. Great city.
Wonderful city and a very historic and interesting city. Congressman, the reason we asked you to join us today was to talk about the stimulus package. First of all, the debate has started. How is it going, do you think?
Well, it's going the way I expect it to go. It's going to be the Democrats carrying the water for the American people and for jobs and for a 21st century economy, and the Republicans trying to win an election in 2012. They're the minority. They've been soundly defeated by the electorate, and they're not accepting the election of President Obama. I think you give a president, especially one with this kind of popularity, in an economic crisis, but the need to go forward and the lessons of history with Herbert Hoover and Secretary of Treasury Morgenthau, who didn't act in the 30s, you give them support, and you try to create jobs, and you try to create improved technology, best in science and education and health care, and help people are out of work, and that's what we're doing. And it's going to pass. The amendments that the Democrats support, there's been a one bipartisan amendment making kind of making more transparent, guaranteeing transparency and guaranteeing whistleblowers protection. Otherwise, a couple of Democratic amendments have passed that require these funds to be spent 90 days rather than 180, or guarantee that they're starting these projects, making sure they're stimulative. But the votes will be pretty much Democrats. I think most of the Democrats vote for it, most of the Republicans vote against it.
But, when you mention most, is it not going to be 100% of the Republicans vote against it?
I don't know. You know, sometimes some of the Republicans vote right.
I've heard that, but I can't remember when.
But the last Congress, there were about five of them that sat together. Walter Jones of North Carolina and gentleman from named Gilchrist from Maryland and a couple other, and they vote pretty good on the war and a few other issues. And sometimes you get somebody, and there's Chris Shays up the east, but anyway, I don't need to talk about the few Republicans that voted right. And there's an old story about if you get an automobile that they got the transmission's got a D and an R, and then if you want to go forward, you go and drive, and if you want to go in reverse, you put it in an R. The same thing with parties. You want to go forward, you go with D, Democrat, and you want to go backwards, you go with R, Republican.
That's certainly been my experience. I'd like to ask you a little bit about the stimulus bill. I think we've all heard by now that it's some, 640 pages long. How can you, as a legislator and one of our elected leaders, how can you go through a document of that size and really decide on every little bit of it?
Well, A, you can't. You have staff help you with it. You have you read a lot of briefs on it. You go to a lot of caucus meetings, whip meetings, where it's discussed. It's impossible to read such a bill. War and Peace would be tough to get through this week.
Oh, it would. The biggest benefits of this bill, how many jobs, how soon, those are the questions Americans are asking right now. How soon is this going to stimulate the economy? And you already mentioned that they've moved it up, some of it from 180 to 90 days, which is one of the major gripes about the thing, as you know. When would you think we'll start to feel some relief from it, and how many jobs are we aiming for here?
Well, the plan is that we'll create 3 to 4 million jobs and making us globally competitive and energy independent and having a long-term effect on our economy. The tax cuts will start immediately, and 95% of Americans will get a tax cut, and that'll put money in the economy quickly, and some of the spending will start immediately. 75% of it will start in the first 18 months, but it's going to take some time. And the economy is not getting better, and there are really drastic forecast about the economy from business and from economists and from people involved. More problems with the banks, the financial structure and all these layoffs we had the other day, 70,000 jobs cut in one day, unemployment's going to go up. This is a tough time in our country. George Bush and Dick Cheney have left us with a mess.
Oh, certainly. And one of the questions I have is this plan, the stimulus package, has been formulated over some time now. I'm sure it's been in the minds of the Obama people for a long time, and they've been floating ideas for a long time and formulating ideas for a long time. But in the meantime, while it has finally been pretty much solidified, we had this mess dumped on us Monday about these jobs. Is the stimulus package adequate to do what it is that needs to be done?
Well, I just have to hope it is. When you get a bill on the floor, you can propose amendments in the Rules Committee, or if you're on the relevant committee, which in this time was Ways and Means and Appropriations, et cetera, and I'm not on either of those committees. I filed an amendment in the Rules Committee to try to make the tax cuts more progressive by making them geared toward a lower income than they have them at. I think $150,000 for a married couple, which is where it is, or $75,000 a single. People need help in all areas, but I think if you get it to people a little lower income, $50,000 singles, which is the median income for a family of four in America, or $100,000 for a couple, it's more likely the money's going to get spent, not put into savings, and get spent quicker because those people need the money more. But that didn't pass, and I was going to put that money into cops programs to hire more cops, and we do have $1 billion in cops to hire more cops in this country, which is jobs and law enforcement protection, which we need, but also more money in the National Institute of Health. I just think we need to keep people alive, and policing and research are two ways to do that. But if you don't have that opportunity to go through Rules Committee, you have to vote for a bill up or down on the floor, and you get it up or down. I'd like to see more spending and less tax cuts. I'd like to see even more spending, certainly more than we've got, and less in the way of tax cuts.
We're talking to Representative Steve Cohen of Tennessee, of Memphis, Tennessee. Congressman, I hope you've got a couple of more minutes. There are the tax cuts, and there's been some negotiations with the Republicans over tax cut. Please explain to me why the Obama, and my listeners ask this question all the time, why would they feel the need to negotiate with the Republicans on this, pretty much knowing you're not going to get anywhere with them, and knowing that they've created this a lot of this mess with the tax cuts for the rich? Why would we listen to whiners and people that have been losers on this notion in the first
place? Well, I don't totally understand it, Guy. You know, these tax cuts aren't for the rich. They're for the 95% underneath. But 95% goes too high, in my opinion. And I think he could have done it even more progressive. That's why I offered my amendment. I didn't think it was going to pass, but Julian Bond is a good friend of mine. And I said something to Julian. We had lunch last week, and I said, you know, this is a president who I support. I was endorsed him in the primary. I voted for him at the convention as a delegate, a superdelegate, and I support him. And I'm going to vote for this bill, but I don't think this program is as progressive as it could be. And, you know, he said, you know, your job is to do the right thing and try to, you know. So I put my amendment forth. Didn't get anywhere, but I felt like it was necessary to voice it. I don't know why he's talking to the Republicans. It may be brilliance. Maybe it's the way Americans, polls all indicate that people want us to be more bipartisan, that that's why they're upset with Congress, why our ratings are so low, is because they don't see us as working together. And so maybe he either gave them the opportunity or wanted to at least put the olive branch out and let them reject it, which they've certainly done. And he can't be accused of not trying to work with the Republicans. This might be a brilliant political move, to at least have made the effort. I think President Obama really does want to work with everybody and thinks we can all come together. And I think his blue states and red states speech at the 2004 convention, which was so beautiful, is really how he feels. But you got to have some of those people in those red states agree with you, and they don't. There's a big difference in Democrats and Republicans, whether you want to vote with business or whether you want to vote with consumers and middle America. And whether you want to vote for the environment or whether you want to preserve our earth or whether you want to vote for business again, there's so many places, and business really runs the Republican Party. They're not interested in the average American. They're not interested in the planet Earth. They're not interested in consumers. And there's a big difference. So I think President Obama is trying. Maybe he's just brilliant because he tried and he was rejected. Quite a few Democrats in the House are a little bit you know, we're a little hurt, to be honest. I hate to say it, but we are. I mean, he's met with the Senate. He's met with Democrats and Republican groups in the Senate. He's met with the Republican House. He hadn't met with us. And he's going to come to our retreat in a week or so. But that's fine and dandy. But he hadn't met with us.
Well,
and some of the liberals, of which I'm one, who felt like we needed more spending and we needed to do more, and would have liked to have seen, it didn't like the idea that we were treated in taking money out for low income individuals for family planning that we felt was a good thing to have in the bill. That was taken out because the Republicans complained about it. It was the type of thing that the Rush Limbaughs would run out there and try to make a big deal about. That was taken out. Some of the monies for ball improvements, which was mostly to make sure that Thomas Jefferson Memorial and others don't fall into the tidal basin because they're built on wood platforms that are being eroded by the water and they're in danger of crumbling into the tidal basin, and they're going to be, you know, maintained, and that's one of our jobs is to maintain this beautiful District of Columbia. And we've retreated on some areas, and we took out the opportunity to put money into the public zoos. And I've got a public zoo which has a lot of work, WPA construction, worked in the 30s. Zoos create jobs. The construction there does. This is construction money, and that creates jobs for people because it's tourism. But they took that out because the Rush Limbaugh made some stink about swimming pools, zoos, and aquariums. They took it out. Those are engines that drive the city's economies, aquarium in Chattanooga, zoo in Memphis, et cetera. But we've capitulated on some things I wish we wouldn't have.
I know some of my listeners have expressed a desire not to capitulate on many of those things, because what inevitably happens is they'll turn that huge right-wing noise machine, the Hannitys, the Limbaughs, they'll turn them loose on you. They'll be smiling in the photo ops, meeting with President Obama, going to the White House, attending the meetings in the Capitol building, and they've got the shiv ready to shove it in your back politically, and I just don't understand the sense of it, but you're right.
I don't get it either.
Maybe it is brilliance. Maybe it is brilliance, and you and I just don't understand, and I hope that's the case.
Yeah, and to follow back, it came up in our caucus, and David Obey said, well, you've got to have compromise around here. I'd do it different. Well, I know David Obey's a good man, and basically his values are my values. But Yvette Clark, you know, since she said she stood up and would have supported and argued in favor of the all improvements, which they talked about as being sod. It wasn't sod. It was construction and things necessary. But, you know, you're looking for the backlash. During Clinton, they had something about midnight basketball, and that was a good thing, getting kids out there and off the streets and playing basketball rather than going out and being on the corners and maybe involved in drugs. That was a good program, but Rush Limbaugh sensationalized it. It was a political error. So these folks have been around, you know, they've been around the block before, and they kind of know what's going to happen.
Well,
what I found in my history, and I spent 24 years in the state Senate before I came up here 2 years ago, is that no matter what you do, the Republicans are going to lie about you when you run for election if you're running against a Republican. So you might as well vote for what you want to vote for, because they're going to lie about you regardless. Don't make any difference what you voted for. They'll lie about you.
Wasn't it Harry Truman who said he promised to stop telling, or if they promised to stop lying about him, he'd promise to stop telling the truth about them. If you don't think that Rush runs the Republican Party pretty much from that studio of his, and we're going to talk about this on the program a little later today, ask Representative Phil Gingrey of Georgia if I don't know if you've heard about that little flap yesterday and today about how he went on Rush's show and begged for forgiveness, but he did.
Gingrey did?
Yes.
That's sad.
Yeah,
Limbaugh's been un-American, suggesting that he wishes President Obama to fail. That's un-American.
Yeah, absolutely. We went after him pretty hard yesterday, but... Gingrey had said it wasn't right for him to say that, and then Rush raised a squawk, and he called Rush Limbaugh on the program and humbly apologized for disagreeing with Rush. So we know who we know who runs the show. Congressman Cohen, I want to thank you so much, and I thank you for what you're doing, working hard there, and you know, just about everything you've said here today, I agree with you, and I hope you'll keep fighting a good fight, and hoping that we get this bill the way it needs to be done, and something that, you know, really works for America. We're all wanting that really bad.
Well, we do, and I'm pleased to be on your show. I have the great fortune to represent Tennessee 9. I'm the only Caucasian congressman to represent a majority African-American district. I am a living part of Dr. King's dream. And we judge people based on the content of one's character, their voting record, their production as a congressperson, as a political person and not on the color of their skin. And Memphis really showed the way. Barack Obama was is a product of Dr. King's dream, too, that we've come a long way in America. And I'm proud to be here and to keep the fight ninth and of Memphis and Tennessee 9 in the Democratic Liberal corner.
Well, and I do want to mention, I was at the inaugural last week, and I might mention that the mall might need a little bit of sod right now.
Sure it does. They put on a great show and a great venue for one of the great historical moments in our American history.
Congressman Steve Cohen from Tennessee, thank you so much for being on the program.
You're welcome, Guy. Bye-bye.
Well, some interesting comments from the congressman. Despite the problems we had getting him through on the phone, to hear that a few of the Democrats are a bit upset over this capitulation on some issues and the unnecessary compromising on some issues. Hey, listen, it's not going to work. Not going to work. And I hope the congressman's right. I hope he's absolutely right. I hope it is brilliance and that you and I just don't understand and that Barack Obama pulls off something special here. If he's able to get the Republicans to come around somehow and stop this Limbaugh business, why, that'll be something very special. Let's head on over to the phone. Hello, you're on the Guy James Show. Whoops, we got a dial tone. I don't know what's going on with the phone. Call us back, please. 866-546-5254. What is going on with the phones today? We're having one of those days? Phil Gingrey, Republican from Georgia. There, those folks are calling back. Let's try this again. I don't know what kind of problems we're having here today. We'll let it ring a couple more times before we answer, just to make sure. Hello, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, Guy, it's Kevin from Brooklyn.
Hi, Kevin.
Yeah, about the situation Barack Obama is in, I think it's a game of chess that he's playing with the conservatives. And it's, you know, he's trying to reach out very early on so they can purposely do what a conservative does, which is smack him on the wrist. So then he's going to do what he has to do.
Tell me how this chess game's going to work. So, I don't really understand.
Well, okay, you know, he's trying to work with them as far as getting the economic stimulus package going through, and they're ripping it down left and right because it's what they do. Granted, knowing that deep down it's their fault why this economy is screwed up to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the false gospel of tax cuts, especially during a two-front war and the nation's bankrupt, is a total unrealistic situation. I'm not expecting a tax cut, and I make peanuts. And, you know, it's totally unrealistic. But, you know, he's going to reach out. He's going to, you know, do what he has to do. And then when they smack him on the wrist, he's going to bring out what I hope to them will be the nuclear option. You know, raise taxes on the rich and say, look, you didn't want to work with me this time around. I'm going to do what I have to do. And do a couple of sign-on executives, you know.
Okay, and now if I get you right here, if I'm understanding what you're saying, 3-4 months from now, after trying and trying to work with the Republicans, and they don't work with him at all.
Yeah.
Mr. Obama, President Obama, God, that's, I love saying that, President Obama, he goes on TV at primetime some night and says, folks, I've tried and I've tried and I've tried to work with these Republicans, and it's obvious they don't want to help America. They don't want to help me. That's what you think he's after?
Yes.
Well, if that, and if they took a tailspin politically, although I don't know how they could get any lower, but if politically that works, that would be a stroke of genius.
I think I understand how he thinks. You know, I don't know if I mentioned, I'm from the West Indies, and we have a saying, give them enough rope to hang themselves.
Yeah.
And I think that's what he's literally doing, giving them enough rope to hang themselves.
Well, maybe that's it. I hope so. I hope in the meantime they don't give anything away significant on the stimulus package, anything really big, in order to do this. But you know, they've shown an absolute unwillingness to work with him at all. I missed the boat. I really thought that right out of the gate there might be a bunch of them say, hey, we're going to cooperate. We're going to look like we cooperate and. And we'll
no.
Well, I thought they might try and gain some political points that way. They just got their asses handed to them in an election, and I thought they
began to think you're a religious man. Come on, man. Oh God, that's really a choco.
Well, I wasn't going to attribute the success to them. I didn't think they were going to have an epiphany. I thought President Obama.
These people, they are so heavily invested in maintaining the status quo. It's like their minds cannot think no other way.
Well, I think you're right. I think you're right.
Anytime, and I'm going to get it personal with John McCain, which I try not to do, is when any time he allows George W. to do to him in South Carolina back in 2000, what was done, and then a few years later, Powell rallied him on his birthday.
Yeah, that's it.
That means he's heavily invested into the status quo.
Well, I agree. I hope you're absolutely right. I hope you can call me in a few months and say, "Boy, guy, you were naive. You had no idea what was going on. I saw it all." I hope that's the case. I would love to be dead wrong on this. You could hear the disappointment in the congressman's voice about being a little bit irked that he'd met more with Republicans than he has with Democrats and given up. Thrown a few chips into the pot that maybe he should not have, but we shall see. We shall see.
Because, you know, these guys are heavily invested into the status quo.
They are.
Heavily.
They are.
And they're going to fight tooth and nail and use every bit of power they have. And I think Barack, you know, it's a week and he's trying to extend his honeymoon period and they're not allowing him to have his honeymoon. And you know what? I think that hammer is gonna fall within a few months.
Well, so far it appears that the American people are still having we're willing to have the honeymoon for a while and let him do what he wants and have great trust in him. And man, his approval ratings are sky high, and they can't stay that high, but. It appears that maybe the Republicans aren't willing to give him a chance, the elected of Republicans, but maybe a lot of the public is.
Well, the thing is, the economy sucks.
Yeah.
You gotta understand, a lot of these guys are busy out there buying personal jets and all that. They don't know the reality.
It's true. They don't, evidently, they don't have a reality in mind, nor do they care. So long as they have their $1.2 million office renovation and their $50 million airplane. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, and I think a lot of them just kind of have this mentality of the fall of the Roman Empire. Eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die.
Well, I certainly, it's okay for us older folks to feel that way, but I hope the younger folks don't, or we surely are headed for a fall.
Old farts anyway, so, you know.
Yeah.
Like, come 2000, they're already trying to start the 2010 campaign and hopefully recoup a few Senate and Congress seats, which I don't think is going to happen. If anything, they're probably going to lose even more so if they keep on becoming adversarial.
Yeah, and especially if this stimulus tree starts to bear some fruit, they'll be out of power for a couple of decades, and they know it, and that's probably the desperation that we're seeing. Hey, got to run. We got news coming up. Kevin, good to hear from you. And
okay, Marshall.
Everybody else, call after the top of the hour, 866-546-5254.
Okay, bye.
You're listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. And, boy, I'm going to go see Ricky Skaggs and Paul Brewster and Kentucky Thunder tonight. Bluegrass is going to be at the Naples Philharmonic. I can't wait. It's going to be fun. Got some down front seats. Should be a rootin' tootin' good time. Haven't been to a bluegrass deal for a long, long time, and I am looking forward to it. Listen to the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network, and I expect when we get back from the news, each and every one of you will be right where you're at right now, okay? Let's make a deal. See you later, right after the news.
Listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. For the first time since the Labor Department began keeping track in 1976, the unemployment rate increased in every state of the union during the month of December. Jesse Russell reports.
The two hardest hit states continue to be Michigan and Rhode Island. Both states have broken double digits in their unemployment rates. Michigan is on top at 10.6%, and the state, hit hard by dragging auto industry sales, is likely to see those numbers continue creeping up after January, with GM announcing more layoffs on Monday. Rhode Island has watched its unemployment rate nearly double since the same time last year. In December 2007, the New England state had an unemployment rate of 5.2%, and at the end of December 2008, that rate was 10%. Eight states saw a month-over-month percentage leap of more than 1%. Forbes.com has been keeping a running tally of layoffs at America's top 500 largest companies. As of 4 p.m. on Tuesday, the month of January had seen 138,252 layoff announcements. That already puts January well above layoff announcements in December of 2008. According to Forbes, the top 500 companies in the U.S. slashed 108,000 jobs that month. Four states have insolvent unemployment trust funds, with 13 states saying their funds are at major risk phase.
Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid told the Las Vegas Sun that a vote on the Employee Free Choice Act labor law reform is likely this summer. The labor law reform is a top priority for labor and is strongly opposed by business interests. It makes it easier for workers to form unions free of employer intimidation by just signing union cards. AFL-CIO President John Sweeney says passage of the Lilly Ledbetter Fair Pay Act will make a real difference in workers' lives. The bill makes it easier for workers suffering pay discrimination to legally press their cases. Sweeney says it helps ensure fairness and equality in the workplace. AFL-CIO is urging President Obama to sign it into law quickly. United Healthcare Workers West says the trusteeship papers were served on it by SEIU International on Tuesday. The big California healthcare workers local is in a dispute with SEIU International over reorganization of the local. SEIU International wants to move 65,000 workers out of UHW into another local. UHW leaders and the rank-and-file workers in that union say that these workers should be able to vote on whether they want to be part of another local or to remain within UHW under their own locally elected leadership. Finally, an economist has an idea that nearly every worker can get behind. Economist Dean Baker says shortening work weeks should be part of the economic stimulus package. Businesses could get stimulus tax incentives to cover the cost of providing extra paid vacation and sick leave to workers. Workers' compensation would stay the same, employer labor costs would not increase, and since workers would be working about 6% fewer hours per year, Baker says businesses would have an incentive to hire more workers. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Fly! Fly, you hear me? Give my creation! Fly!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Get countdown. Six.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Oh, all right, we're back. I'm just reading something here that makes me laugh, and I'll share it with you in just a moment, maybe some of you. You know, it's hard to get ahead of the people on a radio program anymore because with the Internet and all, everybody's up to the minute on the news, so... You know, forgive us if once in a while we repeat something that you already know. I don't know if I've been so swamped since I got back from the inaugural and just swamped with work and activities that I haven't been able to keep up on the horn as much as I normally do. And I haven't been able to listen to Bob just a little bit one night as I heard him tell the story of being there, and it was just one. Nobody tells a great story like Bob. Bob is so articulate and just able to just surround you with a story just to bring you in and have you all warm and fuzzy by the time it's over with, if it's the kind of story. But I'm just going to ask the question of those of you on the chat room, and because I don't know and I didn't ask Bob. I just want to ask a quick question. Did Bob say anything to you about Big Eddie? Did he say anything about Big Eddie? I'm just going to leave it at that because I don't know. And if he did, why, then we'll discuss it. But if he didn't, I won't discuss it right now. I'll wait for him. Well, there we had the phone ring again, and somebody's gone. I don't know. That's a number I'm not familiar with as far as the area code. I don't know. I see it made news today that this dope, this Representative Phil Gingrich of Georgia, he kind of threw some stones at Rush Limbaugh a couple of days ago about him saying that he hoped Obama would lose, or, you know, would fail. He said that. All right, now here we're getting that call again. We're going to try and do this here. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, Guy.
Yes.
Hi, it's your buddy Scott from Sweden.
Hi, Scott. How are you?
Pretty good. It's I who keep trying to call you, but it goes about a few rings, and then it starts sounding weird, so I hang up.
Oh, okay. Well, thanks for calling. Really good to hear from you.
No, I just wanted to mention when you were talking to the congressman about, you know, some of the different ideas and some of the different plans that were going on, that I just thought people might be interested to know that what's going on here.
Yes.
Well, of course, we're having, you know, let's just say once, if America gets a cold, the rest of the world sneezes.
Sure, sure.
So, you know, we're getting a lot of the backlash from this. But one of the things they're doing when it comes to, I think, They're also using tax breaks and other things, but they're not doing it. We just give people just a certain amount of money, but they direct it more. And one of the things they're thinking of, they know people should always be retrofitting houses, and they know in a downturn that tradesmen, you know, carpenters, electricians, plumbers, and all this are one of the first not to get work. And, of course, when they don't get work, that just has this multiplier effect. One of the things they'll do here is they'll use a downturn in which to tell people, okay, if you've been putting off fixing up your house, now's the time to do it. And you keep your receipts and you'll get like a tax break. And you'll do things like maybe put in more efficient water heaters or maybe energy efficient windows or things like that. So you kill several birds with one stone.
Solar panels included in that, or do they work there?
It can be. It can be. That's a little far north for those to be very efficient.
Mm-hmm.
They're fine in the summer, but then, you know, really need them as much in the summer as you need them in the winter. When it comes to alternative energy, wind power is beginning to pick up. My wife and I recently bought shares in a windmill, and now we're getting wind energy to our house.
Oh.
So then you can just like buy in. They'll put up somebody's thinking of building one. They'll get a bunch of people to invest in it, and then you end up like owning. It's like a co-op.
Oh, how many people do you know? How many people would be involved in a co-op?
Oh, geez, I don't really know. My wife is kind of the business taker care of her.
Yeah,
I'm losing my English.
This would be like the old party line phone system. It'd be 20 people on a phone line back in the old days.
I'm going to shout the question though, while she's in the other room. Agita, how many people hold shares in a windmill? Yeah.
I have no idea how much power one of them actually puts out. I'm certainly going to find out next week. We're going to that Green Jobs conference.
Yeah, my wife thinks it's about between like 50 to 100 people will get together to kind of own a windmill.
Wow. Well, then it's not a cheap investment.
Oh, no, but it's once it's built.
Yeah.
You know, the fuel is rather cheap once it gets up there.
I have not been up close to one, and I watched a documentary the other day on TV about one. I had no idea they were as big. I guess I just never noticed how big they are.
Oh, they're huge.
That one, it was 300 feet tall. I just didn't know they were that big.
Well, yeah, there is an economy of scale that once the wing surface, what they call the blades, the bigger they get, the more energy you get out of your investment up to a certain point. And the material science of that is getting so advanced that it's becoming its own special branch of material science.
I just know I'd hate to be the guy that'd have to climb up inside of that baby 300 feet and grease the bearings or whatever they do now and then. 300 feet, that's amazing. And those propellers are just monstrous. I just didn't really know that until I saw that documentary.
Well, they're bolted down. It won't tip over if you climb up.
Yeah, well, I got a thing about climbing.
Yeah, in small enclosed spaces.
I'm a farm boy, and, you know, the old silos at the grain elevators were 100 feet tall. And you climb up the outside of one of those, that was more than enough for me when I was a kid. Never cared much. And, of course, other people take to that like a duck to water.
Well, the wind energy in Scandinavia is getting to be huge. Denmark is, I think, up to around 20% of all their electricity comes from wind energy now.
Wow.
Because it sticks up like a little polyp up there into the North Sea, so they have these long expanses for the wind. Even the gentle wind has nothing to obstruct it until it hits land.
Oh, I see.
And they have a low coastline, so they put these big towers up there, and it's just a natural wind farm. And the Danes, Vesta, I think it's called a Vesta, it's the big windmill company, is Danish.
They'll end up maybe supplying power outside of their country, maybe, if they have some left.
Well, they're still trying to, you know, they want to get as self-sufficient as they can, but they're selling windmills all over the world.
Mm.
And the North Sea and into the Baltic, they're shallow enough that you can bed the things down into the floor of the sea.
Wow.
And still have them stick up enough. And
Now the ones you talked about in your... this co-op that you're involved in, is there just one of them there, or is there kind of
a group
of them?
There are many, many. There are many different co-ops. This is I think ours is located up towards the end of the mountainous area, up towards Norway.
Mm-hmm.
And that's good there too. It's like the Appalachians, which is geologically related to the spine of a mountain area, like the Coal River area. The air piles up and it has to flow over the mountains and it hits the passes and it's channeled and all in some really good windy spaces.
Yeah.
All up and down the Norwegian-Swedish border.
I've never been there. I would like to see it. It's one of the areas of the world I would like to see.
Well, I was going to offer all the horn people political asylum had some president, but no need for that now for a while.
We're okay for 4 years. We might need a quick trip out. Who knows? But I have confidence that we'll make it through okay. I really
well,
do.
Well, you put up a big circus tent. You guys can all live in that.
thanks for the offer. We hope we don't need it, but we'd like to come and visit anyway. And maybe we can arrange a tour, and you can be our tour guide, show us around over there.
Well, Tom Hartman went to Denmark last summer, so.
Yeah, Tom gets around. I had a nice chat with Tom last week. Tom's a good guy.
Well, there's no reason the horn when you guys are, when the ship comes in, come over and do Scandinavia and talk to people here, because there's so much to learn. From the Scandinavian model that's been around since the first big depression in the 20s and the 30s.
Sure, it's been a long time since you've had a serious economic problem there, hasn't it?
Well, there are always strange things happening. Being a little economy that like Sweden's is, it's kind of specialized in forest products, paper, and also a lot of iron and such, so kind of primary stuff. So that if the world economy turns out and there's no demand for what we produce, it can get kind of hairy. But there's also an awful lot of small companies, privately owned companies, everything like two to several hundred people making all sorts of bizarre little things through the country. They really try to promote small business and not just retail but production. It's kind of a protectionist sort of a mentality that the more you produce, the more you sell to the sell abroad, the more income you have coming into the country. Mm-hmm. The opposite of what is going on in the U.S.
Yes, yes.
Although there are companies that are indeed leaving for Czechoslovakia and other new members of the EU, but it's not government policy to promote that.
Yeah. Well, interesting area of the world, and I hope things continue to go along okay for you. We are still facing some pretty tough times here in this country. I hope it doesn't get a whole lot worse, but it is worsening as we speak.
They're predicting, looking in the paper while you're doing the news, and they're thinking that Sweden might lose about 100,000 jobs, they're predicting in this year.
Out of a population,
of about the size of Ohio's, that would be over the year. If all goes, that's kind of the dismal prognosis or prediction. It may be less. It just depends on how bad it gets. So
okay, 30.
People are worried.
25. That would calculate at about 2.5 million here in this country, if my math is approximate. There, that'd be about the same as, and that's a significant loss. 100,000 jobs.
Yeah,
very significant.
It is, but they created like 100,000 the year before, so mm-hmm. it goes up and down. But at least what you're not going to see are the like benefits running out, and people's pensions here are not tied to the companies like they often are in the U.S. It's a national plan, very much like Social Security. So no matter if you switch jobs and such, your pension just follows you throughout your whole working life. And it's guaranteed.
Well, and is it on solid financial ground?
Well, there was this reform a few years ago, and some of it was going into the stock market and such, and people are regretting that now. But
and your health care?
The health care is wonderful. It is a single-payer health system. Everybody's in. So there's very little overhead, like 2 or 3% or something. And it's subsidized in a very nice little way that it's not, the doctors don't make an arm and a leg. They're not rich. The insurance companies aren't getting rich. But there's still, this is taxpayer money. The taxpayers pay for this system. Everybody's in the same one giant insurance pool. So there's a real need to keep the cost down. But since there's not a huge outlays for insurance and profit, the hospital and profit for the insurers, the costs are about half of what the same treatment would cost in the U.S.
Since it is single payer, is there private insurance available for somebody who wants it?
Yeah, there is, but not too many people take it. There's not much reason to take it.
Okay,
it is available. There are some people, the real conservatives type, who would much rather prefer to pay more to go to a specialist private hospital than to rub noses with the socialist masses.
Well, no.
those kinds exist everywhere, and I suppose they're the ones who buy the private insurance and such. But I've needed the healthcare system for an eye operation, and it was wonderful. I had a torn retina, and I was in the next day, operated, and the whole thing out of pocket was only maybe $50.
And it's not like you don't have any experience in the healthcare here.
No, I was too young to need it when I was living in the States.
All right,
it was a long time ago.
yeah. Well, hey, we sure thank you for calling the program. You're a wealth of information, and I want to tell you one thing right now, and the people on the website know, on the chat room know this. Man, you got one wicked sense of humor. if you could all see what he sent me not too long ago in a way of some pictures and a story, you would know what I'm talking about. ELO knows. And
should I have it posted on the what do you call that thing, the blog?
I don't know. Maybe you should. I read that and I was astonished. I absolutely was. I thought somebody, and this is kind of a private conversation here. Now some of you wonder what the hell is he talking about. I had an adventure in Oklahoma quite a few years back, and when he sent me this story that he wrote, I all of a sudden started looking over my shoulder because I thought somebody must have been there filming it some 25 years ago or whatever it was. It was eerie, and then I got the it was really eerie. You were spot on with that. It was a great story. So
I know how Ohio farm boys are.
I guess you do.
I grew up one, so what the hell.
Hey, thanks so much for calling and thanks for sharing that.
Okay, I'll see if I can get ELO to put that up on the blog so we can demystify this.
All right. Thank you.
Take care.
Bye now. Oh my. I had the TV on during the news to take a look and see if anything's going on I didn't know about. And I had mentioned previous to the news that I wanted to mention what I consider to be, we've had these humiliations. We had the senator from Louisiana. We've had Bill Clinton's humiliation. We had what's his name from Florida, the gay congressman, and what's his name from Idaho, and all these people, all these elected officials that have had public humiliation. And it's got to be really bad. It's got to be bad. And they stand there and they take it, and they usually come back from it like and pretend it never happened. But Representative Phil Gingrich of Georgia, in my estimation, has suffered a worse public humiliation than all of those people added together. I would not be in his shoes for any amount of money or fame or fortune or anything today. I would not trade places with Representative Phil Gingrich. I just saw him on TV the other night blathering about this and that, and he's one of the leaders of the Republican Party. And I am just amazed at what I've heard from him and read about him. As you know, we had our dear friend Rush Limbaugh say something about he hoped Mr. Obama, President Obama, failed. And it was a big deal on the news. And Bill Bennett said it wasn't the right thing to say. And I don't know how he has escaped Mr. Limbaugh's wrath. But evidently, when Mr. Gingrich said a few things about Mr. Limbaugh that were a bit unkind, that Mr. Limbaugh shouldn't have said that in this climate and all, Gingrich from Georgia. He said that he didn't like what Mr. Limbaugh said, and there was a storm of protest by Rush Limbaugh. And lest you think for one moment that Rush Limbaugh does not control the Republican Party, if you think he and his ilk don't have an iron-fisted control of what goes on in the Republican Party, you're sadly mistaken. And as we went through the whole litany yesterday of having a hopeless drug addict and a man with less ethic and morals and character than anybody I know for some of the things he's done, just plain moral cowardice. Don't get me started again. To have him as the leader of your party, and he is, they can't deny that now. They can't deny it now. They can never deny it again because of Phil Gingrich. It seems he said something against Limbaugh, and that Limbaugh shouldn't have said what he said about Obama failing. And there was a storm of protest calls and emails and faxes to his office that inundated Gingrich's office from fans of Rush Limbaugh. And it's pathetic. It's just pathetic. He got down on his knees and begged Rush Limbaugh for forgiveness. I'm not kidding. I cannot imagine. I cannot imagine doing what this man did as a public. I think he's a doctor. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think he's a doctor. But he got down on his knees and begged Rush, drug junkie Limbaugh, the man that sent his maid out to buy his drugs for him, begged him for forgiveness. It's pathetic. He spoke his mind one day, and he goes running to lick Rush to Limbaugh's boots the next day. I hope everybody gets this. I hope everybody understands this. That Rush Limbaugh is feared by the Republicans in the House and in the Senate. He is feared by them. And he tells them what's what. He forms their opinions for him through his program. They are deathly afraid of Rush Limbaugh. And so Gingrich says this, and he gets excoriated by Limbaugh's fans, and Gingrich puts out this pitiful comment. It says, and let me quote it, "As long as I am in the Congress, I will continue to fight for and defend our sacred values. I have actively opposed every bailout, every rebate check, and every so-called stimulus. And on so many of these things, I see eye to eye with Rush Limbaugh. Regardless of what yesterday's headlines may have read, I never told Rush to back off. I regret and apologize for the fact that my comments have offended and upset my fellow conservatives That was not my intent. I am also sorry to see that my comments in defense of our Republican leadership read much harsher than they actually were intended. But I recognize it is my responsibility to clarify my own comments. Well, now that's pathetic. It's really pathetic. And if it ended right there, it would have been a sad chapter in this man's political life and a sad chapter for the Republicans. But you know, it didn't end there. Oh, no. It didn't end there at all. It appears that Mr. Gingrey decided that begging like that wasn't enough. Oh, no. So he called Rush Limbaugh's program. Yes. He called Rush Limbaugh's program to apologize. Can you imagine a United States congressman calling this drug addict, oh my God, and apologizing to him on the air in front of God knows how many million people, a ton of them, that's for sure. And I would have played you the audio, but I don't know. I thought I'd put a little more ring to it. Here is the exact conversation. The phone rings, and it's Gingrey. And he says, quote, Rush, thank you so much. I thank you for the opportunity, of course. This is not exactly the way I wanted to come on. Mainly, I want to express to you and all of your listeners my very sincere regret for those comments I made yesterday to Politico. I clearly ended up putting my foot in my mouth on some of those comments. I regret those stupid comments. End quote. And Rush Limbaugh said, ever so condescendingly, well, look, I appreciate that. I'm glad you called. I can't. I just think that that's maybe one of the funniest things I've ever seen in political life. Absolutely one of the funniest things I've ever seen and the most disgraceful, humiliating performance of a politician, I think, in my lifetime. I would a whole hell of a lot better be like Senator Craig explaining his bathroom antics than I would be calling Rush Limbaugh and getting down on my knees to him. Oh, I'd be Senator Craig any day than I would call up Rush Limbaugh and apologize on the air for not towing the line, for towing Rush Limbaugh's line. Oh, my God. I'll bet old Rushy boy had his hand under the desk when that thing, you know what I mean? I bet he did. Sorry for that, putting that thought in your head, but that picture, I'm sorry. I really am. I'm sorry. It never ends. But Representative Gingrey, I don't know. I think you owe America an apology. I think you owe all your constituents an apology. Oh, my God. This is just too good. It's just too good. I'm sorry to carry on about it, but I can't help it. As the guy says, I don't care who you are. That's funny. And speaking of stupid stuff, just being as dumb as they come, and I mean idiotic. Did you hear what Congressman Steve King from Iowa said yesterday? You know, you think Gingrey maybe, I mean, Gingrey's number one. But in our, and we need to start something here like they do on some of the other shows, and maybe call him, as my Uncle Bud used to call him, morons. Maybe we could have the Moron of the Day Award, because Gingrey wins it today. There isn't any question. We hand out the gold to him. No question. But Congressman Steve King of Iowa is a close second. You know, we've had all these Republicans all of a sudden become terrified of losing these Gitmo people on America. They're going to be running rampant everywhere. I mean, there's going to be one behind every tree to hear these Republicans talking. Oh, my God, not in my state. You're not going to subject the people of my state to those terrorists. They'll be running willy-nilly, and hell, they'll have country club memberships. Oh, no, we don't want them in our supermax prisons that nobody's ever escaped from ever, ever, ever. No, no. We even had one Republican talk about reopening Alcatraz. Hell, some guys got away from there, we think. We're not sure. Scared to death. Actually, personally, they're not scared. Not a bit. But you know their tactics. Fear and smear? Back at it. They don't know how to do it any other way. Any other way. No, 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 no. Scare the hell out of people. And so, the second prize for the morons today goes to Congressman Steve King of Iowa, because his objection to bringing the Gitmo detainees to some prisons in America goes like this, and let me quote him. Let's just say, this is Steve King talking, let's just say that Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, the mastermind of 9/11, is brought to the United States to be tried in a federal court in the United States under a federal judge, and we know what some of those judges do. And on a technicality, such as, let's just say he wasn't read his Miranda rights. we would read Miranda. Okay. And he goes on to say, he's released into the streets of America. This is on a technicality, mind you. Sheikh, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. Judge says, gee, I'm sorry, Sheikh. We're really sorry they didn't read you your Miranda rights. Man, we're really sorry. Hey, just, here's $50, hit the streets, and God bless you, boy. Good to see you. You're a free man. And so he's gonna turn him loose in the country. And so to go ahead and, finish quoting Congressman King, and I quote, he is released into the streets of America, walks over and steps up into a U.S. embassy, and applies for asylum for fear he can't go back home because he spilled the beans on Al-Qaeda. And then what happens then if another judge grants him asylum in the United States and Khalid Sheikh Mohammed is on the path to citizenship? End quote, Congressman Steve King of Iowa. And I suppose I could strap myself onto a rocket and fly to Jupiter and find some little green men who worship a statue of George Bush, too. I guess it's possible. Oh, my God. So, my congratulations. I don't have a third prize. I'm going to let all the rest of the House of Representatives, the Republicans, be tied for third place in our Morons of the Day Award. You know the old story about how Steve Garvey and the Los Angeles Dodgers had this big rivalry with the Cincinnati Reds a long time ago when Pete Rose played for the Cincinnati Reds. And Garvey and the boys sent Pete Rose a really nice leather briefcase, I believe it was. And they were big rivals, you know. And so the Dodgers went together and they bought this nice leather briefcase, I'm sure it was a leather briefcase, and sent it to Pete Rose and said, Pete, we've voted you the second best looking guy on the Cincinnati Reds team. And of course Pete took the bait and wrote back, gee whiz, thank you guys, who was first? And Garvey and them wrote back, the whole rest of the team was tied for first. And that's pretty much our third place winner today, the whole rest of the House of Representatives. is tied for third in our Morons of the Day award. No shortage of them right now. No shortage. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in a minute.
Look for the union label when you are buying a coat, dress, or blouse. We remember somewhere our union sewing, our wages going to feed the kids and run the house we work hard. But who's complaining? Thanks to the ILG, we're paying our way. So always look for the union label. It says we're able to make it in the USA.
Look for the union label when you are buying a coat, dress, or blouse. Remember somewhere our union sewing, our wages going to feed the kids and run the house we work hard. But who's complaining? Thanks to the ILG, we're paying our way. So always look for the union label. It says we're able to make it in the USA.
Look for the union label when you are buying a coat, dress, or blouse. Remember somewhere our union sewing, our wages growing to feed the kids and run the house we work hard. But who's complaining? Thanks to the ILG, we're paying our way. So always look for the union label. It says we're able to make it in the USA.
My, oh my, that one's got a few years on it for sure, doesn't it? That song was very popular for a good number of years, wasn't it? Good number of years. I'm having one of those days where I'm having trouble with my mouse. You ever have trouble with your, there we go. Thing doesn't want to pay attention. 866-546-5254, if you'd like to join the program today. I can't help but think of Representative Gingrich. Rush, please. Please, Rush. I have sinned. I have sinned. Rush, please. Please, Rush. Oh, wait a minute. That was Jimmy Swaggart. I Same thing. Same thing. Ah, yes. I think that Representative Gingrich should head on down to Palm Beach to the massive Rush Limbaugh estate. And I'm talking massive, 51,000 square foot house. And he should stop at Home Depot while he's there. That'd be one of his folks for sure. And stop in and buy himself some of those black rubber knee pads that the guys that work on concrete use. He might want to buy a pair of those before he heads on over to Rush's studio, don't you think? I'm sorry, but I can't help it. That's the damnedest thing. Ah, boy. 866-546-5254. I should move on to something funny, although I don't know a lot of funny things are going on right now. That was one of them, though. That did. I do thank Representative Gingrich and King for giving us a little bit of entertainment today. It was a good thing. 866-546-5254. Thank you for joining us today. I wanted to bring this up, an article by Paul Craig Roberts that I read and I think bears repeating and something that should be taken to heart by everybody. And let me just read you some of this. In fact, I might read you the whole article. It's important. And I wish this is a message I wish we could get through to our Democrats in the House and the Senate and in any position of leadership in Washington right now. I don't think they're going to listen to us on this, but they should. And let me quote this article by Paul Craig Roberts. Quote, "The evidence is sitting on the table. There is no avoiding the fact that this was torture." Those are the words of Manfred Nowak, the UN official appointed by the Commission on Human Rights to examine cases of torture. Nowak has concluded that President Obama is legally obligated to prosecute former President George W. Bush and former Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld. I don't know how they leave Cheney out of this thing, but back to the story. If President Obama's bankster economic team finishes off what remains of the U.S. economy, Obama, to deflect the public's attention from his own failures and Americans' growing hardships, might fulfill his responsibility to prosecute Bush and Rumsfeld. But for now, the interesting question is, why did the U.S. military succumb to illegal orders? In the December 2008 issue of Counterpunch, Alexander Cockburn, in his report on an inglorious chapter in the history of the Harvard Law School, and this is a horrible story, I was aware of this story, an inglorious chapter in the history of the Harvard Law School, provide the answer. Two brothers, Jonathan and David Lubell, both Harvard Law students, and do Google them, Jonathan and David Lubell, L-U-B-E-L-L, and Harvard, and read the story about them. They were politically active against the Korean War. Remember, this was the McCarthy era, and the brothers were subpoenaed. And they refused to cooperate on the grounds that the subpoena was a violation of the First Amendment. And so Harvard Law School immediately began pressuring the students to cooperate with Congress. The other students ostracized them. Pressures from the dean and faculty turned into threats. Although the Lubells graduated magna cum laude, they were kept off the Harvard Law Review. Their scholarships were terminated. A majority of the Harvard Law faculty voted for their expulsion. Expulsion required a two-thirds vote. Why did Harvard Law School betray two honor students who stood up for the U.S. Constitution? Cockburn concludes that the Harvard Law faculty sacrificed constitutional principle in order not to jeopardize their own self-advancement by displeasing the government, and no doubt donors. We see such acts of personal cowardice every day, says the article. Recently, we had the case of Jewish scholar and Israel critic Norm Finkelstein, whose tenure was blocked by the cowardly president of DePaul University, a man afraid to stand up for his own faculty against the Israel lobby, which successfully imposed on a Catholic university the principle that no critic of Israel can gain academic tenure. The same calculation of self-interest causes American journalists to serve as shills for Israeli and U.S. government propaganda, and the U.S. Congress to endorse Israeli war crimes that the rest of the world condemns. When U.S. military officers saw that torture was a policy coming down from the top, they knew that doing the right thing would cost them their careers. They trimmed their sails. One who did not was Major General Antonio Taguba. Instead of covering up the Abu Ghraib prison torture scandal, General Taguba wrote an honest report that terminated his career. Despite legislation that protects whistleblowers, it is always the whistleblower, not the wrongdoer, who suffers. And when it finally became public that the Bush regime was committing felonies under U.S. law by using the NSA to spy on Americans, the Justice Department went after the whistleblower. Nothing was done about the felonies. The article goes on to say, yet Bush and the Justice Department continued to assert that, quote, we are a nation of laws. The Bush regime was a lawless regime. This makes it difficult for the Obama regime to be a lawful one. A torture inquiry would lead naturally into a war crimes inquiry. General Chagouba said that the Bush regime committed war crimes. President Obama was a war criminal by his third day in office when he ordered illegal cross-border drone attacks on Pakistan that murdered 20 people, including 3 children. Well, I don't know about that. The bombing and strafing of homes and villages in Afghanistan by U.S. forces and America's NATO puppets are also war crimes. Obama cannot enforce the law because he himself has already violated. We don't have proof of that. For decades, the U.S. government has taken the position that Israel's territorial expansion is not constrained by any international law. The U.S. government is complicit in Israel's war crimes in Lebanon, Gaza, and the West Bank. The entire world knows that Israel is guilty of war crimes and that the U.S. government made the crimes possible by providing the weapons and diplomatic support. What Israel and the U.S. did in Lebanon and Gaza is no different than the crimes for which the Nazis were tried at Nuremberg. Israel understands this, and the Israeli government is currently preparing its defense, which will be led by Israeli Justice Minister Daniel Friedman. UN war crimes official Richard Falk has compared Israel's massacre of Gazans to the Nazi starvations and massacre of Jews in the Warsaw Ghetto. Amnesty International and the Red Cross have demanded Israel be held accountable for war crimes. Even 8 Israeli human rights groups have called for an investigation into Israeli war crimes. Well, some of that I agree with, and some of it I most assuredly do not. But I think it's a sad, sad state of affairs when there are hundreds of truckloads of humanitarian aid sitting on the Gaza-Egyptian border, sent by the French, sent by the Swiss, sent by Mercy Corps, all kinds of relief agencies, some perishable food that's rotting, all kinds of trucks that carrying flour and juice and baby formula and sugar and rice, setting in the sun, rotting, because it's not allowed in to help the people in Gaza, humanitarian aid. And what the Israelis are demanding is that all these supplies be taken from these trucks and put on Israeli trucks so that they can examine every piece of it and make sure that there are no arms and weapons. An article in the New York Times said this normally quiet commercial crossing between Egypt and Israel has been turned into a parking lot of stalled humanitarian aid. And in the city of Al Arish, there are even greater quantities of food, clothing, and essential supplies sitting, waiting, and baking in the sun. Trucks everywhere, medical supplies, are the only things that are getting through. Since the ceasefire, Israel has allowed some humanitarian supplies into Gaza. But as the world knows, the territory is still desperately short of the necessities. They closed all the crossings again on Tuesday after an Israeli soldier was killed in a bombing on the Israeli side of the border. That didn't change anything at the crossing in Egypt. It hasn't been open for days. In the meantime, the article in the New York Times says, truckloads of humanitarian aid are sitting in Egypt. That includes 13 generators and Amir Abdullah's trailer full of food. All of our lunch meat is going to go bad, said Mr. Abdullah. whose tractor trailer loaded with food and blankets sat in a line outside the stadium in El Arish for 24 hours without moving. I believe that that's criminal. I don't care what country's involved. I don't care what religion's involved, ethnicity. I don't care what's involved. That's criminal. To starve people, to literally imprison them in their own country, and not allow the necessary food and clothing to get in. There's been an outpouring of support for Gazans, mostly from the Arab world, but also from Europe, Venezuela, and non-governmental organizations. But nothing else is going through that border. The United Nations has hollered about it. Relief agencies all over the world have hollered about it. But nothing is being done. And as I mentioned, I never want to seem as though I'm picking on a certain group of people. This is wrong. This is wrong now. This is wrong in the future. This is wrong in the past. This kind of behavior is not acceptable for one group of human beings toward another. It is not acceptable to keep men, women, and children from having enough food. It is not acceptable to keep them from having proper clothing and decent housing. It's not acceptable to bomb civilians. Whole families killed. It is not acceptable. So, forget your condemnations of, oh, guy's a racist, guy's a bigot, guy's anti-Semitic, guy's anti-this, guy's anti-that. No, that's BS. Got nothing to do with any of that. There's right and there's wrong. There's right and there's wrong. The color of your skin, your religion, none of that matters when it comes to right and wrong. Doesn't matter one whit. It's a sickening situation. Well, we've talked a lot about it, but we've got precious little done about it. Had so many other things we were going to talk about today. We'll get to it soon about the what some of the financial experts are calling the coming credit card crash, which could impact our economy in a horrendous way. And it does look as though it is coming. So everybody start thinking about paying cash for everything if you can. Companies are cutting off credit limits. They're canceling credit on people who don't even know why they're being canceled. We'll talk about that more next week. You know, Bob and I are attending the Green Jobs Conference next week. I'm looking forward to that in a big way. It should be good. I know I, for one, have a lot to learn about green jobs and about the environmental movement to help making our country no longer dependent on foreign oil and all. We've got a long, long journey ahead of us in that regard, and we hope to learn a good deal about it next week. Of course, Bob has been very active in the coal problem, mining problem in West Virginia, and knows a good deal about this already, and I'm looking forward to learning. So we'll keep you posted on that journey to Washington, D.C., back to the Capitol next week. My, it just seems like we were just there. In fact, we were just there. So, hey, I do want to remind you that the program is a listener-supported program, and we are in a position, and we told you not too long ago that we're in a position of being yay or nay with the program, so we hope you'll help out. 866-546-5254. We want to thank Representative Cohen from Memphis, Tennessee, for being on the program today. Great, great guest, and he gave us a great insight into this stimulus program that's going on. So thanks for joining us here on the Guy James Show. Always great to have you with us. Another one of those days where... Here we go. Proud member of the Head On Radio Network, and we'll join you again tomorrow. Listen to the Guy James Show. Don't forget, you heard from the radical right now. All that's left is the truth. Later, and thank you.
Now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. Good morning, America. Good evening, America. Good afternoon, America. Whatever time zone you're in. I've been reading about the details of the agreement between the Democrats and the Republicans, or at least the prospective agreement on the stimulus package. And, of course, what few Republicans agree are Arne Inspector, Susan Collins, and Olympia Snowe. The great majority of the Republican Party has declared war on the stimulus package, declared war on Obama, declared war on America. And I was trying to wrap my head around this. I was trying to figure out why Republicans wanted so much misery. And let's face it, we are in the greatest depression since the Great Depression. Why could it be that Republicans were so determined to say no to anything, no negotiation? I mean, the Republicans were acting like, some terrorist groups. And in fact, one of them, Congressman Pete Sessions, Republican of Texas, actually gave the Taliban as an example of the Republican negotiation strategy. He said that he was acting not like a loyal opposition, but like an insurgency, that we, quote, understand perhaps a little more because of the Taliban. And that's what they went about, talking about the Taliban, talking about the Republican Party. And that's what they went about systematically understanding how to disrupt and change a person's entire processes. And these Taliban, I'm not trying to say the Republican Party is a Taliban. I'm just saying it's an example of how you go to change a person from their messaging. And we need to understand the insurgency may be required when the other side, the House leadership, does not follow the commands that we entered the game with, blah, 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 blah. The heart of the message of the Republicans and their leaders, whether it's Congressman Pete Sessions or whether it's their true supreme leader, their true religious leader, the one they all give obeisance to, the one they all bow down in front of his idol, the big fat idiot himself, Rush Limbaugh. Their goal is to make America as bad a place as possible. It's not just that they hope Obama will fail. They hope America will fail. And trying to wrap my brain around why it is the Republicans want to see so many Americans in misery at a time when our unemployment is up to 7.6%, and when you add the underemployed, those that want a job but are only working part-time or aren't in the job that they want, it is 14%, one in every seven Americans. When trying to wrap my head around why Republicans want us to be so miserable, well, really, it's, I guess, not that hard to understand. You see, George Bush took gold and turned it into straw, or really something far more putrid than that. Bill Clinton bequeathed to George Bush a very strong economy. Think about it. In 1993, at a time when no Republicans again voted, not a single one, for Bill Clinton's tax package, which passed by one vote in the House, which required Al Gore, as vice president, to break the tie in the Senate. At that time, the Wall Street Journal said that the Clinton proposal, which included a few tax increases on super wealthy people, will lead our country to a terrible depression. Instead, Bill Clinton gave us the single greatest economic boom in American history, both in terms of length of time, 1993 to 2000, a good 8 years, in terms of jobs created, in terms of even the national surplus. We were booming. The rich were richer. The middle class was richer. The poor were richer. And the country, the government, was richer. We had so much money, we didn't know what to do with it all. Bill Clinton talked about using it, part of the surplus, a third of the surplus, to pay down the Social Security Fund, to get rid of that entitlement program, too. To get rid of that, not the entitlement program, to get rid of the problems in that entitlement program, too. Times were indeed that good. They were so good that I remember Alan Greenspan going to the Hill, the Federal Reserve Chairman at the time, and arguing that it was dangerous because we were going to pay off our entire national debt, and what would we do with the money? We wouldn't know what to do with the money. Which kind of reminds me like complaining when you go to Vegas that you're going to win so much money that you're just not going to have a bag to carry it home. What will you do? Oh, no, I put a quarter in this slot machine, and it's raining down millions, and I don't have a place to put all the money. What will I do? That was their complaint. Times were that good. Times were so good that the only thing the Republicans could think to criticize, given our incredible economy, our massive surplus, the fact that the poor and the middle class were doing so well, productivity was up, and yes, there were no wars. The only war we fought was in Bosnia, which I think was completely justified. We stopped a genocide from happening, and the enemy shot down, killed not a single American. There were three that were dead in a plane crash. That's it. And we saved hundreds of thousands of lives. Times were so good that the only thing they could even think to criticize was the fact that Bill Clinton liked to get a little tail on the side. Not that I'm excusing it, but he wouldn't be the first, second, third, fifth, or 20th president to have had that predilection. That was it. We spent an entire year on what happened with Monica Lewinsky's dress precisely because there was nothing more concerning to the American people. So George Bush took this incredible, wonderful economy into the dirt. Even before September 11th, the economy started turning sour when he did what Republicans do, stole from the poor to give to the rich, massive tax cuts for the super wealthy, leaving the rest of us behind. And then he spent like there's no tomorrow. Not on bridges, not on infrastructure, not on things that actually help the country. God knows, not on levees to protect New Orleans. No, on Halliburton, defense contracts. And a bunch of it just, well, down the tubes. Like my personal favorite, the $12 billion in cash that just got misplaced in Iraq. Oops. Oops, you know. It's so hard when you have 20 tractor-trailer trucks full of $100 bills. And you just misplace them, you lose them. And one of the things that rarely is discussed is that what success we've had in Iraq does not come from a troop surge. It came from us paying off our enemies, paying off the very insurgents that were killing Americans and, frankly, killing a lot of Iraqis, too. We paid them off. And now they say, when asked, do you want to kill Americans, or if they're Sunnis, do you want to kill Shia? They say not at this time. Not as long as we keep being paid protection money, hush money, quiet money. Everyone just wants to be paid. In Pakistan, they want to be paid. In Afghanistan, they want to be paid. In Iraq, they want to be paid. They want to be paid not to kill. Hamas wants to be paid not to kill. Everybody, every terrorist group, the Taliban wants to be paid not to kill. But, you know, when the mafia comes in and offers you protection for a price, sometimes it's best not to pay that price. I guess I shouldn't complain. Things are a bit quieter, not much, in Iraq and Afghanistan. But at a time when we are shelling out money like there's no tomorrow, it just seems like maybe we ought to prioritize what's happening at home first. But George Bush shelled out money like there's no tomorrow, and he shelled it out on people who really didn't use it to help the economy. Certainly gave a lot of it, as we know, to people in Iraq and Halliburton and people like that. But he also gave a lot of it to those people on Wall Street that then turned around and did the Vegas thing and gambled with it. And to be clear, some people made billions of dollars. Billions of dollars gambling right. If you want to know where all that money went, it didn't vanish. Oh, yeah, your 401k vanished when the stock market crashed in half. That certainly happened. But a lot of people got rich off this, gambling on the credit derivative swaps, just gambling the right way. And now we are in a huge mess. Really a mess that has no comparison outside the Great Depression. And it's not clear how to fix it all. I do think the government's trying. But the point is that George Bush inherited very good times, and in his 8 years, he brought us one short recession that, frankly, the economy was so strong after Bill Clinton, he tried to ruin it, but there was only so much he could do. And then, given a full 8 years, spending massive amounts of money at a time when we should have run surpluses rather than deficits, we are now where we are today. The worst times since the 1930s. Massive deficits. And now, the Republicans, who so supported all that massive spending in the good times when we didn't need it, who so supported giving all that money to those rich people that gambled on it, bet the farm and the houses and virtually all the real estate in America. Now that all the money's gone, now we're in trouble. And now the Republicans are saying, no more. No more. We Republicans spent like drunken sailors on things like paying off our enemies in Iraq, on things like Halliburton. We just lost billions of dollars helping our friends in the oil industry, corporate welfare, tax cuts for people doing hedge funds. Remember those? The very Wall Street people that were taking our economy down the tubes, and Republicans wanted to and still give them a special tax cut, so that hedge fund managers pay a smaller percentage of the $100 million they earn a year than their secretaries pay on the $50,000 they earn a year. But now that Obama's in charge, now the Democrats are in charge, the Republicans are turning off the spigot. It's enough. No more spending. No more pork. They call it pork. Think about what they're calling pork. For a Republican, health care for a five-year-old dying of leukemia is pork. For a Republican, a police officer who would otherwise lose his job is getting pork. For a Republican, a school teacher who would otherwise lose her job is getting pork. The same is true with